Welcome to Market Proof Marketing, the podcast from the industry leaders at Do You Convert, where we talk about the current and future state of marketing and online sales for builders and developers across the globe. We're not here to sell you, we're here to help you and to try and elevate the conversation. Is there a topic you'd like us to cover or a question you'd like us to answer? We'll do it. Simply send an email to show@doyouconvert.com. Welcome to episode 334. I'm Kevin Oakley, and with me today is Jackie Lipinski and Julie Jarnigan.
Hello. We're here.
The old IBS crew.
That's right.
That was the episode that my son chose to watch to fall asleep to.
Aw.
Nice.
For those of you who don't follow me on Instagram, my oldest son, Hayden, who is 11, he'll be 12 in December. I took it as a compliment, but I can see why you might think it wasn't a compliment. He's like, Dad, I really just want to go in your bed and watch one of your shows. And I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, I just want to hear your voice talking while I'm falling asleep. I was that's so cute.
When you
adorable.
Put it like that. Yeah, that's sweet.
And I listen to podcasts to fall asleep too, of podcasts I like, not that like bore me so much they put me to sleep. But then it was the IBS wrap up episode where I was talking about eating 18 dumplings. And so then my oldest son fell asleep. My youngest son, Mason, came in the room to watch what was happening and ran over to my wife and said, Mom, did you know Dad had 18 dumplings for dinner and didn't realize it? It's like, this is why I don't let my family watch this stuff. Cause then I had to explain myself and now I'm on a diet and
I was wondering if this could be like that, what is it called? ASMR content now, where we're just going to like slowly eat chips or the dumplings on this and make everyone fall asleep.
Oh, I couldn't do it.
No.
Maybe. All right. Story time. Julie, you're up first.
Yeah. Okay. So I've talked before how I love my Woobles. For those who don't know, that's little crochet kits that you crochet a little animal or a little object. It sounds crazy, but it's very relaxing to me. And they have amazing marketing. I think she came from Google or somewhere like this and created this, and they're very good marketers. So, and we can link it. I got an email marketing blast from them the other day, and it, it was cute. Need an ear. Talk to Pierre, who's one of their little characters that you can crochet. The more I talk about this, the more stupid the actual Woobles sound, but they're great. Anyway, it goes down and it's kind of looks like a text conversation. And it says, what if it's too hard? And he says, fear not. We have step-by-step video tutorials. And what if it's another project I don't finish? And you get another response about their bite size, 3 to 8 hours. I'm left-handed. Will it still work? And I thought this was such a good, like, head-on, fun, engaging content way to be like, here are your objections, and we can overcome your objections. And it doesn't have to be anything hard or complicated, but I think there's so many times that we're scared to even, well, we don't want to create content about that because maybe nobody's ever thought about that before. They thought of it, you know, it's out there. And so I thought they found a fun way to just take those things, the reason people may be interested but may not buy, and just take it head on. Be like, we know what the objections are. Here's our response to them, and put it all out there. And I think builders are scared to do that often.
Well, and I can see a builder's response also being like, like an essay. And it's like, we don't need an essay. Like, do I have to buy a home if I go to the model home? No, it's a touch and feel. Just come touch and feel the house. Just, you know, and I think they sometimes overthink problems where they're like, well, I know that these 12 other questions are going to be asked, but I love this example. I think a good creative home builder marketer can definitely use this for inspiration.
Yeah. And it can be anything. Interest rates. We have great interest rate programs. Like you said, you don't have to explain what all that is, just the fact that they exist. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was a fun example.
I've often wondered why we don't have more, I guess, kind of like mini wikis or frequently asked questions stuff on floor plan pages. I know one of the reasons is because if you're looking at the Stanford and someone says, you know, I think the kitchen is too small. Again, the builder's horrified. Oh my gosh, no one's ever going to buy this house again because someone said the kitchen is small. Except for people who want a smaller kitchen and are willing to trade off for something else. And And if the kitchen is small, that's probably something that they're going to say when they go visit the floor plan in real life or look at it on a tour. So it's
I agree with you. It's a lot of being scared of shadows at times versus being confident. I mean, can you imagine? I always go back to like luxury purses or luggage. If they were like, here's the top three reasons people buy this handbag, and you can't know anything else. It wouldn't work. It would not work. All right, Jackie, you're up.
Yeah, my story also goes along with, I think, the unique expectations and what people want. So I am tasked with getting things done in my family. And that means every year I get to book the ever-growing Airbnb Thanksgiving adventure, which means this year it was, I'm just going to say 14 total people. And to try and coordinate a vacation rental for 14 people, who someone wants a pool, someone doesn't want a pool, someone wants this, do we have a hot tub, is there a roof, is there a yard? And then I always start in December, and what, well, I booked it in March now. So it's just months of me just sending like, this is the highest, this is the best, to the point where I was like, I am booking this if no one books anything today. And then they're like, wait, I'll work. So, but to go along with that, every year, adventure and joyous occasion that I get to plan. This year is different because it's been in Washington and now we're going to be in California. And one of the things that was, I really enjoyed was, this is a place I'm going to be staying in just for 4 nights, but the filtering system of, I want a hot tub, I want this, I want lake views, I want these items, here's my parameters, made the experience easy. And again, this was a place I'm staying at for 4 nights, not a house I'm going to be living in for 10 plus years. So I know some builders are always like, oh, well, there's only like 4 houses on our website. What's the point of filters? Let's have them go through all of it. No, everyone has a different parameter. Everyone has different things that they want out of a house. So if there are any unique call outs or special details or things that you think could change a person's opinion about the house, I would say those are, you know, go above and beyond to talk about what makes each house special and individual. And don't be afraid to add filters and have at least a basic filter on each of your community and available homes page would be my, because it's still, yeah, when I see them, Kevin, it drives me crazy.
The episode then, because it goes with Julie's too, of like, just don't be so afraid. Like, yeah, when, as soon as you say make every house different, I'm like, ooh, that's not going to land well with a lot of people. I mean, it might land well with people listening, the marketers, but the executives of the company are like, no, it's square footage. I always think of our, you know, the Texas builders, especially, who name seem to name floor plans after the square footage count of the home. Like, no, just stick to the facts, just the facts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even Julie's example, when I worked at a builder, you know, our most popular floor plan was called the Rosario. And each year we would kind of like morph that Rosario based on feedback. And we'd be like, oh, you know, someone wants the, you know, there's this section of it. Now we move, we made tweaks every year. So it'd also be interesting if, like, you know, I some know some people just have personalities with homes. And if you really specialize or reduce floor plans, you know, those houses can have personalities. And again, you're not, I know Airbnb is trying to appeal to a lot of people, but, you know, only one person can buy that house. So whatever you can do to highlight that, I think, and make that person.
That's an interesting idea. I still, when you say house, I think of floor plan, but especially each individual version of the floor plan, you know, those hotels that have like each room is a different theme or a different name of a celebrity. There's no reason that you couldn't give a unique personality to each individual inventory home version of a floor plan. I've never really thought about it that way before.
Some content marketers taking notes. So, like, I got this.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that makes Zillow so special, and everybody has to compete with Zillow, is it does become, you become like obsessed with your special search that is exactly how you want it to be. I remember, like, when we bought this house, when we moved here 7 years ago, like how very specific my search on Zillow was and how closely I followed that. So it really is, you know, that meaningful to people. Like, there's certain things that you might not guess that is the driving factor.
Yeah.
Yep. 100%. my story time, man, there's so many things I could do, but I'm going to keep going off the NAR settlement. Continues to be a topic of interest for a lot of people. Was part of a Builder Magazine article that came out this past week on it. Just got done with an interview for Inman News that should be coming out soon. And it's just, it's crazy how much even, I saw an interview that Barbara Corcoran did where she was like, I don't even think the people who negotiated this settlement know exactly what's in it. They haven't really figured this out. And an example of that is that the current president of NAR, his name's Kevin as well, was on a podcast 2 days ago where he was said something that no one realized until that moment he said it, which was that you know, the buyer has to sign a buyer's representation agreement prior to viewing a home come July. You have to have something in writing saying, here's the services I'm providing and here's what I'm charging. Well, everyone assumed that meant a buyer's agency agreement. And he said, oh, no, no, because every state law is different and some state laws would not allow a kind of standard buyer's agency agreement to be used. So all that the agreement says is that there must be a written agreement. It doesn't have to be of a certain kind or a certain style. All it has to do is detail services rendered and estimated, or, you know, the cost paid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the people who were interviewing him, which one of them runs his own general real estate brokerage. Several hundred agents across the country. And the other one is like his COO. And they're both like, what? Huh? And so there's still just more coming, and we don't want to bore people who don't really care. But here's the big thing that we've kind of come with some clarity. And actually, Mike Lyon and I are both going to be doing a live episode because our producer is going on vacation to Italy. Good luck, Olivia. And so we're going to do a live episode, so we don't have to do any editing. And we're going to have Brian Boero from 1000 Watt, as well as a broker in charge of a local office in Tulsa, talk about there. So we'll have more to come, but the main thing is you should probably be treating real estate agents differently, meaning like all of my friends who are realtors are professionals. That's why I'm friends with them, because they're experts at what they do. They do it well. But I just recently recorded, it won't spoil Mike's joke because we'll be doing it live with all of you. But his wife is a certified yoga instructor and a realtor. And guess which one took 3 times longer to be certified to do? Yoga instructor. So even her perspective is kind of like, for the person who just does 1 or 2 transactions a year or ever in the history of being a realtor, mm-hmm. it's kind of like multi-level marketing, in that it's just like, I already like this thing, or I'm already do this thing, or in their case, you know, they already buy and sell investment properties. And so, yeah, why not just have this license? And then if I have a friend who needs some help, I'll help them out. But that's, you don't have to treat those kinds of agents the same way you treat, you know, the top 40 producing agents who are actually spending money and advertising and getting their name out so that they have a likelihood of even being a procuring cause. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's what, at the end of the day, that's the main reason home builders are happy to compensate agents and brokers, is because you're the procuring cause. And so if you do no marketing, no advertising, and you just coach your, you know, son's soccer team, the chances are that you're probably not a procuring cause for what's happening.
So it's a great time right now, while we're waiting to figure all this out, is for you to be figuring out who those realtors are. Who mm-hmm. are the realtors who actually like consistently do deals with us? Who are the top performing realtors in the area of each area that you build in? And then no matter what happens or what things you change or change outside, you're going to have already started to build relationships with that core group. They're going to stick by you and you don't have to worry about the rest. So it's a good thing to work on.
The analogy that got the most chuckles from the Inman reporter, her name's Hannah, is I said, when you don't treat people evenly or fairly, and I mean, that'd be the negative way to think about it. If you're not treating all realtors fairly, it's not going to be a problem. So, well, think about it this way. If the least popular kid in your entire school is trying to make fun of you, but all of the cool kids have your back and are like, you're my best friend ever, then no one really cares. And so that's, you know, I'm not trying to be demeaning to anyone, but if the top agents who do all the business understand that you have a relationship, are happy to compensate for procuring cause, have, you know, set processes and procedures, then the other ones, you still should pay them something and, mm-hmm. you know, give them a flat fee and then say, hey, the next time you come back, we're happy to add you to the cool kid club or the high producers club program. But the reality is they'll probably never come back because they only mm-hmm. do one transaction every year or two. All right. First up on the news, and I just threw this one back in there. It scooted out of the agenda, but from TechCrunch, as deal rumors fly, Alphabet and HubSpot would be a strange pairing. And so this came out late last week that Google, who makes, by the way, $208 billion in advertising revenue a year with great margins, is considering acquiring HubSpot, which has $2 billion a year in revenue and not as good of margins. So the first thing is, and some other folks have already commented on this, so I'm borrowing some ideas from them, but most acquisitions are either defensive, offensive, or status quo, right? Those are really the only three categories they could be. And this one strikes me definitely as a defensive move by Google if it goes through, because of something that I actually haven't heard anyone else talk about. There's been a lot of people saying, well, maybe they want to get in the CRM business. Okay, it's a $2 billion revenue, and that's 1%. And I've interacted with a couple different folks who run public companies, and a 1% change in your revenue is not typically the kind of projects and large initiatives that a company like that undertakes, because it's like, we're going to do all that work and spend all that money and integrate everything. So if it's only going to move the needle 1%-ish in the short term, it's not worth doing. There's a lot of things that large companies just don't do because it's not going to impact their stock price. Maybe they could get more people to sign up for CRM. Maybe they could more tightly integrate into Google Cloud, other stuff. But I think what it's really all about is attribution.
Mm.
And I think, HubSpot's a great platform generally overall. But one of its deficiencies is ad reporting within the platform, and in particular, lead attribution. And I'm working on a write-up on this. I was waiting to see if more news would come out first. But I got several screenshots from HubSpot's own support system where someone is complaining that, you know, they have the lead reports integrated with HubSpot, or the ad reporting integrated with HubSpot. And when someone goes on and signs up for like a free downloadable tool, HubSpot says, great, that's the first touch attribution, you know, organic search, found this tool, downloaded it. But then if someone interacts with four or five additional ads, it gets no credit. So that's first touch attribution. We've talked about this before, but first touch attribution is like the inverse of how the rest of the world mostly looks at last touch attribution. Someone replies back and says, no, in HubSpot, you can just change your lead attribution setting from first touch to you or whatever else. And they go, no, I actually talked to someone at HubSpot and they said, yeah, it's not going to give you credit no matter what you pick. So I probably went too deep into that just to say HubSpot's lead attribution is not, you have to use accurate in air quotes because no one's is accurate. The bottom line is Google's, I think, annoyed that a platform that's gaining traction like HubSpot isn't giving Google the credit that it thinks it deserves. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so if we know, and I actually, I'm working on a keynote talk for PCBC that just says basically lead attribution is broken and we might not be able to fix it, because everyone has thumbs on the scale of their own reporting mechanisms to say, no, give us more credit. Because too many people are trying to oversimplify how digital marketing and marketing generally work. And so they look at the report and it says 30% of your leads have come from Google. Okay, then we should give Google 30% of our money. And that oversimplification of how lots of people look at this reporting means that it might be worth them buying HubSpot for, I think it's $40 billion to get $2 billion in revenue just to protect the lead attribution of Google's advertising product. That's my thoughts.
Wow. See, I thought it had to do maybe along with first party data consent a lot, and then going along with I think Google just got their hands slapped and they're having to delete. I'm sure you would know the number off your top of your head, Kevin.
All the incognito window stuff. Guess
incognito
what?
They've been tracking
the whole time.
Yeah. Whoops. So I thought it was some kind of element into, as people have to lean into first party data, them kind of offering this new service and what that means and how.
And that's the other reason I think people are not, would not be happy with it is, spoiler alert, a lot of HubSpot implementation companies are kind of like, the unprofessional real estate agents in that they just want to sign you up for HubSpot so they can get a recurring revenue bonus from them somewhere between 10 and 20%, depending on what they're doing. And so they don't really care. They're not really involved. So if Google buys HubSpot, guess what they're going to do? They're going to say, no, thanks. Like there's no one who gets paid 20% by Google for running Google ads. Cause they don't need that. So there's a lot of people who really hope this doesn't happen for that purpose. Cause it would ruin their business model. But the other thing is Google might make HubSpot less expensive and or free in exchange for allowing access to the data in your CRM. But what are they going to do with that? They're going to update their algorithm targeting.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also why, real estate agents have sometimes an uncomfortable feeling about Homes.com or Zillow and other platforms. Because they say, yeah, if I use you too much, if I'm too dependent on you, then you have that data, you could sell it to someone else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that idea of, would you want Google to be able to have a toggle in Google Ads that says, please remarket people in the CRM, it's not going to say it this way, but people in the CRM of a competitor.
Yeah.
Because in theory, that would be possible.
Yeah, that gets murky.
Yeah, exactly. All right, next up from duconvert.com, 4 Google Business Must-Haves for Home Builders by Brant Henson.
Secret little weapon.
Brant is a marketing analyst at duconvert, and he has extensive background in SEO. Those of you who are like, but duconvert doesn't do SEO, you're right. But one day we'll have him on, but I thought this was really interesting feedback from him is because he understands everything from an SEO standpoint, when we showed him how to run Google Ads the best way possible, he's like, this is so much more fun because in the SEO world, you can work on something for a long time and maybe see no result or a little result and just, or the lag is really big. He goes, I change the ad or I build the ad the right way and wow, like it starts working and I can see the results and watch the cost and the efficiency of the campaign. He's like, this is way more responsive. You know, because I can just change it to be exactly what I want. But I had breakfast with Brant. He happens to also be in Columbus, Ohio. And so over pancakes, we're talking, he's like, I really enjoy writing. He's like, ooh, well, Julie also enjoys writing. You guys should talk, but also, since you enjoy writing, maybe you should write something about what you know about SEO, so that people can learn. So Brant went off and did it. And this is the article. So we can just go off the main points here. The first piece is name, address, and phone number consistency. NAP, N-A-P, stands for name, address, and phone number. It's relatively straightforward. Just you have to have everything be the same. And that builds trust by Google and SEO organizations that the information is accurate. The more repetitions of that information that match exactly, you know, everything has to be exact, the more that Google will trust that consistency over others that are not as accurate. Make sure you have the right business category, individual profiles for each location. I think this is something that confuses the heck out of people. Of yes, you do want to have individual profiles, but you do have to be careful because Google has guidelines that can be violated if you do it wrong. So check the link in the show notes and check it out. And then the last part is dedicated review management. So reviews that happen on platforms, you can't just let those sit. Mm-hmm. And we know from past DYC Summit speakers, the most important thing to any review is to respond. Mm-hmm. Responses are a must, good, bad, or ugly. And then you can try to take it offline or do other things. But that's that was more important to people determining to work with someone, was not if they had a 3 or a 4-star review, but what percentage of the comp of the reviews were responded to.
Yeah.
Way to go,
Brent. I thought this was awesome. I learned things from it for sure. Mm-hmm. I read it after he wrote it, which he is a great writer. And I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, that makes sense. So it's great. It's definitely worth the read.
Yeah. And more to come on that. Cause you know, we don't do it. So why, but we do train and talk to people about how it works and how to properly work with outside partners who do. Wink, wink, maybe in the future we will. But for right now, we can just give everyone all the secrets and insights and how to do it for free. So take advantage of that. All right. This is the one I'm most excited to talk to you all about. So I hope you read it. It's from whatworks.fyi, which I've never heard of before. But sorry, not sorry, self-promotion doesn't work. If you hate promoting yourself on social media, I've got good news. It wasn't working anyway. And I'll kick it off here. In true internet grandma style, let me settle into my digital rocking chair, straighten my lap blanket, and begin with a good old back in the day. When I started creating content online, there weren't any proven strategies for promoting yourself or your content. No one was talking about building an email list or social media audience. It wasn't that those things weren't happening. They were. It's just that the strategy didn't consume us. I had an email list and a social media following in the tens of thousands before I ever started to think about growing my list or building my audience. But now that's where everyone starts, is how to basically self-promote.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys have any insights from this one that you thought were interesting? Or
I thought, what a great title. Because I think you get a lot of influencers who are going to disagree with you. And this will definitely create controversy because she does kind of come back to it at the end. She's like, the drudgery of self-promotion where it's like, okay, now buy my book. Okay, now buy my book doesn't work. But when you're talking about the content and you're creating, it's not about don't create content. It's about don't sell. Like don't sell the soul of yourself and oversell it. Cause that's what is an immediate turnoff for people. It's get people addicted to your content. You know, we talk about the smallest viable market, like create content for your audience and just don't necessarily over self-promote, and it'll come as you do more promotions. But it would definitely be interesting to hear, Julie, what your takes were for, opinions.
No, I loved reading this one. This one was fun. So it does talk about, you know, self-promotion isn't nearly as effective as just focusing on having remarkable content, like content that people want to see, want to talk about. Also talking about, she had like 3 R's, respect the medium, respect the audience, and redistribute the idea. And some of it was the fact that, we think about where we're linking to, but it shouldn't just be a bridge to get them somewhere else. The content piece itself has to add something of value. And then if they go on, that's okay too. But if it's just that to get them to link out to something and do something else, it on its own has to provide something. And every single platform, that's a different thing that you need to provide. You know, what you're going to provide somebody on TikTok is different than what people want to be provided on LinkedIn. You know, mm-hmm. You really have to think about your platform. And you want to redistribute, but there's different things for different formats. And we actually just talked about this with somebody the other day. It's trying to actually fit that platform and give people what they're looking for on that platform. And I did actually, I started reading a book. It was a very, very long book, nonfiction. And it kept referring back to his course or his class. Like, you'll learn this in my class. I was like, then why am I reading this huge book if you're not going to tell me all the secrets and I have to go to your class? So I think people are sick of that on social media too. Mm-hmm. Like, here's a tip, but not really. I'm really going to give you the tip if you give me your information or if you sign up for my class. Like, I think people are over it. People see through it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think,
and I know you have,
you always have to bring value first, which is part of that respect the audience part. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I just kept thinking of when I was reading this was people who want to be famous for being famous or want to be known for being known. I think that goes with it of, yes, there's a very, very minute group of people or potential that you'll reach a tipping point where people view you as their friend. Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, this is the person that I always listen to every single product review they do. I trust what's happening. But even that product review kind of aspect, it's not, they're not saying, buy this from me. This is my product. I'm the one. They're saying, I'm giving you an honest review. If this is helpful, here's my affiliate link, et cetera, which is very different than someone just saying like, hi, this is me again. This is my face. And click this link to buy this thing that I'm wearing right now. And I just like the word that, I guess Cory Doctorow, not the author, came up with this, but the enshittification, mm-hmm. sorry if you're listening with your kids, but the enshittification of platforms and the impact that that has where, and you can watch this when you're lucky enough to watch a new successful social network emerge, where there's just tons of value because no one's like stressed out about the platform. They're there doing their own thing, being their own thing. Advertising, if there is some, is not expensive. And so there's not this whole like tenseness to the platform. Where now, you know, if you're going to pay to run an ad on Instagram about a product, you've got to like do the fast talking, scream at the camera, explode something, whatever. And it's not because it's useful or respecting the audience. It's because the stakes are too high. Like, I'm going to go out of business if I don't get your attention and you purchase this product. And that just leads that overall, once that becomes palpable, like the audience feels that, if they don't already have a really deep relationship with you, they're out. Like they're never getting in, which means your audience is going to stop scaling.
I feel like I used to follow some influencer moms, and then Amazon like partnered with them, and then they do that like almost live streaming of buy this. And I would love to see how it changes from when they do the live stream to when they're actually just like subtly pushing links, or their kids are playing with it and they're like, oh, by the way, that's a great thing. My kids love it. Here's a link. Cause I feel like it does feel, well, every time I even got a text message from like Loft today where it was like, hey, we're having a live event, text this if you want us to send you the link to watch it as it's happening. I'm like, oh no, like I don't want to do that. So when you do feel like it's too salesy and too pushy, I almost like go into defense mode. But I do enjoy the, when they talk about the enchantification, it kind of is like the honeymoon period of a relationship. And then you have to kind of create that content. And then you feel like your hand is being forced to create that content. And you're almost, your hands tied behind your back because it's you have to like feed the beast that is the social platform, mm-hmm. and create the unique content. So, it was funny. Yeah. There's a lot of links.
I thought it was, when she talks about Hotel California as a strategy for most people, which is kind of what you're referring to Julie, of you got the book, now here's the course. And it's kind of this, like all roads lead back to the black hole of you're part of my, and I think there's something to that. In the sense that like we created All Access as a place for people to, outside of the pressure, since you have to be fully employed by a home building company to be part of that, no one's in theory there to sell you or to get you to buy something. If they're engaging, they have questions and you can be a little bit more free. So it's like a community feel.
Yeah.
But every time that we post something, create something that's not like, you have to go into All Access to get it. And All Access is not designed to be the place where you spend 3 hours of your workday consuming paid course content, because there's nothing there to buy. Sorry, if you didn't know that. There's nothing that you can purchase. There's no way to monetize you. So she talks about this idea of the best content creators create an amazing piece of content. And then, you know, so we don't offer the traveler a bite to eat and a full tank of gas and then send them on their way with suggestions of where they might stop next. Instead, they try to turn all online homes into veritable Hotel California. Our strategy has turned into creating this like incessant loop where you just keep buying another product, getting deeper, 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 and almost trapping them or making them feel trapped, which I just thought it was interesting to hear someone describe it that way, because it's intentionally or unintentionally what, how we do try to, you know, all of our stuff is great. Hope you enjoyed that blog post. See you later. There's not like additional hooks in everything to just go deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah. Like a cult. I did have somebody say the DYC cult the other day. I was like, yeah. We're not okay, a cult. People may follow us like a cult, but we're not a cult.
Well, that, you know, I took a class on cults. And so I used to know like the 10 signs of a cult, but one of them is like a messianic leader. We don't have a messianic leader. Sorry. There is no even leader. Like you actually,
but I get this tattoo for it.
Exactly. But there, what's interesting is that typically there is. So, you know, that's one of the things that I think does make Do You Convert unique is there's other people who have content where it's just the same voices over and over again. And our view from the beginning has always been like, if someone has something to say, use the platform to say it. And so that platform itself, I could see how provides tremendous value to people. And in that sense, you feel a cult-like attachment. It's uncomfortable, but I think that my hunch, I don't know. I guess we can figure out at the summit, but you know, people will come up and talk to me, but way more people are coming up and talking to Julie or Jackie or Beth or Andrew or Becca or Bryce. And it's almost because they see them less often at times than me. So
Jen, interesting. Jen's the most popular one.
Yeah. We voted
Jen.
Oh yeah. And Jen, well, yes. I mean, yeah, I think this might be the year, inside Jen. Baseball talk. The last 2 or 3 years, we've had more marketers than online salespeople at the summit. Mm. This year, I don't know what happened, but we got a lot of online salespeople. We still have a lot of marketers coming too, but I think they're going to overtake us this year, or it's going to be super close. So
we're going to be fighting for that bigger room.
Yeah, if you're team marketing, team pancake, then you might just want to make sure you invite a friend. No, we got lots of marketers, and over 240 tickets sold, I think. So doing great towards selling out. Ooh, that sounded like ironic, right? That came after I talked about not having an ever session. Last up this week from marketingweek.com, almost half of brands view marketing as a cost rather than an investment. Marketers believe they are having a greater impact on business, but still feel held back by the age-old perception that marketing is a cost rather than investment. 32%. Good.
I was just going to say, after reading this, I read the article through too. And I think it's kind of the same thing with real estate agents, or kind of we're talking with influencers. Like sometimes you just get a bad apple and it just poisons like you for the rest of your life. And so someone has worked with a schemy marketer, or they see that schemy marketer in their head and then they go, oh, I'll never trust a marketer. And so I feel like sometimes too, like whatever you do, you're trying to aim for that trust. And the data was showing like the larger you get, like almost the less trust there was, because there's less clarity of what even marketing does in the role. And so it's just interesting to see, because we see this with builders in their department sometimes, where like we work with them to explain, and with data, and like Kevin, your funny LinkedIn post with the cats, like, you know, we create processes to create clarity of what the heck does marketing do. And I just love that, the detail with it. But one of the quotes I grabbed from here too was, they thought marketing strategy was most underrated skill in the profession, is voted for survey respondents. And then overrated skills was the mastering of social media. And I thought that was also just the viewability of what marketing is too.
We've had this conversation before, and a lot of marketers are introverts. And I think that's because they're more open, they're more creative potentially. I don't know why, but I would say if I had to pick a percentage, like 75% of the marketers we interact with tend to be more introverted or severely introverted. I'm looking at you. You know who you are. But they're on.
I'm getting an email now.
Oh, she knows who she is.
Yeah,
and we're good friends, so she'll get it. But there's this thing of you have to be able to confidently communicate what it is you do. And you have to toe that line of making things simple enough for people to understand, but share enough complexity where they don't think that, you know, anyone could do this with the push of a button. We have the academy going on. And so I was asking for the 17 people's kind of key takeaway. And one of the gals said, she's been with the company, I think she said for 3 months. And she's like, my boss kind of does everything now. And just like the first day, going through everything, I just kept thinking like, this is really complicated. This is way more complicated than I thought it was. It keeps getting more complicated. Like, she just kept saying, I never in a million years would have dreamed how complex all this is. And I said, yeah, that's one of the things that sometimes we don't do a good job is, we want to be helpful. We don't want to cause drama for the most part, right? We're low drama department. And so that oftentimes means an oversimplification in how you present what you do and how you do it. And that's not always helpful. There have been a couple times in my career where I've invited the person who thinks that they can, you know, come up with amazing ideas that no one's ever thought of, like billboards. And I say, come on, sit in my office. And I show them, you know, the proverbial 50 dials that we could adjust. And I say, you know what, right now, myself and my department are responsible for adjusting these 50 dials, but you seem like a really with it person. So which dial would you like to adjust? Just keep in mind that now you're responsible for the results. And usually they're like they drop their pen, they run out of the room screaming, or like they don't want any of that accountability. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I just want to toss stuff out. And especially once they understand how complicated it is, and they're really like, I don't want to touch it. So anyway, that all goes down to like this part about not being able to communicate strategy.
Yeah.
Is so important. And if you can't first translate, then you can't even have a shared conversation about strategy. Cause if you can't take what they're saying, translate it into what you do and vice versa, it's kind of hopeless. You're just talking past each other.
Julie and I just got off of a meeting before the podcast, and it was a marketer who had gotten a new boss, and the new boss had been there for, Kevin, you're aware, what, 10, 15 years. And he was like, I don't even know what marketing does. And so, I worked with her. We worked with her. We helped her put together a presentation. You're right. And she has said since that presentation about 3 months ago, she has had the best relationship because he gets it now and he's bought in, mm-hmm. and he understands the complicated elements that go in. And sometimes it just, yeah. You're right. Like, it needs to be okay, let's sit down. Let's talk about all the things that we could turn on faucet wise. And
right.
It's not as easy as black and white. There's a lot of gray with marketing, like the attribution.
And that particular person came from the construction background.
Mm-hmm.
So the only kind of ace in the hole was because we all have worked for home builders, understanding, okay, what is that person who's running managing a team of people doing construction, project managers, what are the things that we can connect the dots and say, this is like your construction schedule. This is like having a variance to a purchase order. And as we were talking through that, is like, oh yeah. Cause the construction manager at your company is super annoyed with everyone else when they're like, I don't understand why our costs keep going up. I don't understand why our homes just don't get built on time. And he's like, cause it's freaking complicated. And there's lots of people in trade. And so you got to find that common ground through translation sometimes too. The other thing it made me think of was the scheme. What was the word you use? Skeezy? Is that a
skeezy?
Yeah, skeezy. I don't know.
Skeezy's a word.
I mean, how do you spell that?
That's a great question.
But the skeezy one. Marketer, and this is, it just made me think of this, but this is not a skeezy marketer situation, but we just had to, you know, unfortunately, wind down a partnership with a individual and a team that we really like because they're part of a broader organization where it's not skeezy, but the culture and the people in charge prioritize lead volume over everything. And when mm-hmm. we say lead volume, we just mean conversions that are occurring where contact information is being shared, but they're disconnected from the online sales team. And so when we look at the amount of spam or inaccurate information that's being generated by some of the strategies that are being suggested, it goes back to that trust thing you're talking about of, you know, it's going to go well for another maybe quarter, maybe six months of that strategy for the marketing operations, because the numbers are going to look awesome. But at the end of the day, we just don't want to be known as a company that knowingly created high volume of low quality leads, because it doesn't reflect well on us and it's not best for them. So that it definitely is true. Like, you, people ruin it for other people, and
yeah,
you gotta balance your own internal reputation as well as the department's reputation and company reputation when you're working through all this stuff.
Yeah. And understanding your, I think that's what it is too. I remember, Kevin, we worked together for like 2 years, and then you sent me over the metrics to master document. And then I was like, why did this take 2 years to get this document? Like, I've been tracking this. Okay. And so sometimes you just don't know what you don't know. And if you can't explain it up, you need to find the resources to explain it up. So hopefully, I would love to do a survey of our marketers and feel where they feel most comfortable, because I'm sure our data would be much mm-hmm. better, ideally, than what as a whole the industry is. Because I think it also goes, like you were saying, for SEO, like brand, you know, sometimes you hope it's working for certain elements, or programs take a long time. But when we do like results driven marketing, like we can see that and we can explain that faster. So
yeah. Julie, I wanted to get your thoughts in the article, but before that, I just want to say I don't think I said it well when we talked about Brandt's article. The really fun part about this is, I said, like, we don't charge for SEO. We don't do SEO work. What that inherently means, just to be super clear, is that when you read the information from Brandt, there's this whole other level of skepticism that you don't have to apply to that content, which is just, it's great for your brain.
Yeah.
Because yes, you still have to wonder, like, how accurate is this, and be aware and critical in your thinking. But that whole other layer of, are they just saying this because they want to charge me something? No, you don't. So for as long as we're not doing that, take advantage of all of the content that Brandt or the team makes around the topic, because it should become that much more believable to you, because there's nothing that we're gaining. We don't do it for you. You can't, even if you ask us to right now. Okay, Julie, sorry. Back to the article. Anything else you want to hit on?
No, yeah. The only other thing I wanted to say is that this is our job as marketers, is to change this perception in our organizations. And we're not going to change that by marking off tasks on a list constantly, or constantly saying yes to every request that comes across our desk or through our email. The only way we're going to change this is knowing the numbers, knowing the data, understanding it at a deeper level, how all these things work together for the bottom line, and then learning how to communicate that properly, not just to leadership, but other parts of the company too. If other parts of the company don't understand why you add value, that needs to be part of your mission, is showing them, not just telling them, I swear marketing is doing their job. But if they see those numbers and how things work, and how when we turn a lever, how it changes things and we solve problems, then we can help solve this issue of people not giving marketing, you know, what it deserves.
And I think that also goes to, if you never say, we don't need to spend that money, or we could save money here, if those are things that you do not say somewhat regularly, everyone else looks around you and is just like, well, this person just is constantly spending more, doing more, taking more resources from the organization. That's not what an investor, that's not how they act. Yeah. And so don't ever get comfortable by saying, well, I have this amazing approved budget, so let's spend it all. You want to, you know, make sure that people understand that you're using it wisely, if you want to be viewed as an investment rather than a cost. I mean, I was just, when you were saying that, I was thinking, what if the way that home builders purchase lumber looked more like how we spend ad dollars? It's like, okay, 4 2x4s are going to be delivered on Tuesday, maybe, but we have to pay for them in advance. And then we'll see, you might get 1 2x4, you might get 20, you might get none, but we just have to pay it. And then we'll just see what happens. Like, it's pretty understandable why people are skeptical when you think about it in that way, but it is our job. I think that was a simple but brilliant statement. There is, this is your job to communicate that. It's not just to create traffic. It's not just to create leads and then hide in your introverted hole. It is to make sure that people understand the strategy and have insight into how it works and how they can help it all get better by providing good insight and having good conversations. All right. What do we love? What do we hate? Let's wrap it up here. Jackie?
It's National Library Week. It's probably over, but, you know, go to your library anyway when you're listening to this. So I'm just oddly going to my library a lot and loving every minute of it, because I just went to a book fair and a book for my kid was $12, or I bought a dozen, got a dozen for free. So love your local library. Go read. I think I counted up all the books I read last year and it was like 48. But again, I was on maternity leave, so that's not happening again. So that's why it was a fluke year. But yeah, just loving the library and free resources. Like, Do You Convert? Please dig through our library of resources. Also, we're not here to sell you. So
that's right.
What about you, Julie?
I was unprepared today. I forgot. So when that happens, I always think about food when I'm eating. And right now, this is random, but I'm obsessed with frozen mango, because you chop them up little and it's like eating little frozen popsicle candy. So I'm like on a frozen mango kick, maybe because it's almost summer. I want it to be summer. So that's my new thing. I'll sit here and eat a whole bowl of frozen mango.
I have to try that now.
I'll give you a bonus one then, since you mentioned that. There's this spice called tagine. I think that's how you say it. You guys ever use that?
Mm-hmm. I've heard of it, but I don't know where I've had it before.
So last time I was in Guatemala, this lady, we were working on a construction project, and this lady just walks around the corner with a giant knife and a carved pineapple on top of it. She's like, free samples in Spanish. And so we took a sample and we ordered 3 cut up pineapples for the group. She goes, do you want this other stuff on it? And I was like, what is that? And they said, oh, well, we'll just get one. Everyone can try it. And it's a blend of cayenne pepper or chili pepper, lime and salt. Mm-hmm. And they put it on pineapple, all fruits. And it's actually like, I've only had it on fruits that are really sweet. And so you can imagine that sweet, salty combo. I thought it was amazing stuff. So, and then of course I go back to my local grocery store and it's like sitting right by the pineapples. So, just not aware.
They sell that at the beach, cut up mango with that sprinkled on it by my house. Mm-hmm. I eat that a lot.
I think it's also wrapped on like alcoholic drinks around the rim. Sometimes things. Get ready for my favorite. And I hope this takes over the world. Like, same as ever, you know, remember like the number of people that I've seen talk about that book or principles from that book. It's been awesome to watch, since that came out. So here's your next one. It's not going to be as fun, but I think it's more important. And, you don't all have to read it. We'll digest a lot of the information in here. Julie, put the pen away, cause you don't have time to read this.
I don't know.
You're a fast reader.
How long
but
is it?
This is a 608 page, like super, super, like you cannot read it quickly. I took a speed reading course in high school. I can read pretty fast, but I can't read this book fast. It's called The Master and His Emissary, The Divided Brain, and The Making of the Western World by a gentleman named Ian McGilchrist. I've been sharing videos and thoughts from this with the team at Do You Convert for the last week or so. It's just so incredibly fascinating. And the gentleman, Daniel Kahneman, who wrote Thinking Fast and Slow, which is another great psychological, insightful book, just passed away recently. Mm-hmm. But and I know people love him. I'm just telling you, I think Ian McGilchrist is better and more applicable in more ways than anything I've ever read by Daniel Kahneman. So take that for what it's worth. The main premise is, I'll give you a quick main premise, but it's not going to do justice. Why is our brain divided? It's kind of a weird thing. Not all species of life on Earth has divided brains. And the thing that connects the brain hemispheres actually seems to inhibit the flow of information being transferred between them. You think of it like it must be the neuro superhighway of passing information on. And in fact, it's kind of preventing things from crossing over. And so he dives into the reasons why and the implications there. And if you're in marketing and you're wondering why it's really hard to get your idea across to someone or to explain something, or there's just, I don't know. I'm about halfway through it. I listened to the audiobook about a year ago. And I remember then thinking like, this is mind blowing. And then I got distracted. And so I'm going back through the book slowly, making notes of how I can try to help translate some of this for everyone else. But it's so good. So good.
Nice. Is there an audiobook version?
I bet there is. I don't know. I'm sure there is. I don't know if Ian reads it or not. He also has been on lots of different podcasts. You can listen to interviews of his. But it's fascinating stuff if you like psychology, which if you're in marketing, I hope you like psychology.
Nice.
All right. That'll do it for this week. We'll see you next time, everybody. Oh, live episode. Live episode is going to be happening. Mm-hmm. You'll see it promoted and it's going to be like truly live. I think it's March or May 20, April 25th.
In 2 weeks. Yeah.
April 25th. Yeah.
Get ready.
So check your favorite streaming platform or social network and we'll see you there.
Like and subscribe.
For the never-ending black hole you'll never get out of.
Yeah. Bye.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Market Proof Marketing. Can't wait for the next one? Or looking to connect with other new home marketers? Become a member of our private community, DYC All Access, which is 100% free and always will be. Get exclusive content not shared anywhere else, access to private events, and the ability to join a marketing impact group with other marketers like you around the country. Visit our link in the show notes or members.doyouconvert.com to join. All opinions expressed by me, Andrew Peek, Jackie Lipinski, and our castmates are solely our own opinions. Now get to work and make sure your company is market-proof.